So question arises, explain more about concentration not being taught by the Buddha. How are concentration and focus the same or different? Well, actually what I said was the Buddha didn't tell us to concentrate, but he did recommend concentration. Or something like it. This may seem cryptic and enigmatic, so I better explain this and focus. So, first of all, we're dealing with English language with its own references and meanings. The Pali term that's translated as concentration is samadhi, which roughly, yeah, it's good enough. It means things are joined together. Things are not scattered, they're collected together. And the Buddha seemed to feel this was, well, it's the eighth factor of the Eightfold Path. It's right there. He says, you know, you don't get far without samadhi. Samadhi's good platform, good basis. When the mind, heart is settled and comfortable, then you can review things clearly. This, undisputably, this is what we will benefit from. So why didn't he tell us to concentrate? Because samadhi is not a verb, it's a noun. So it's a state that one can enter. We talk about entering samadhi. You don't do it, you enter it. So it's a particular conditioned state where things are settled, composed, no friction, we're comfortable, we're at ease, and it's marked by a quality of uplift. One feels buoyant and ease, one feels comfortable. So basically, why is this? Because the citta is not compressed, not squeezed, not fractured, not overcast. These wrappings have been thrown off, the compression has been released, the reckless giddiness has been stabilized, therefore it is happy. And the Buddha said, then if one's heart is happy, one is in samadhi. That's it. You don't need to push. You know, if your heart is happy in its collected state, then you will be samadhied. Yeah. And this is just to qualify this. But then he does say things like, well, in order to arrive at this quality of happiness, this kind of happiness, it's a heart happiness, it's not a sensory delight, it's heart feels happy in itself. You go through the body. When the body feels comfortable, relaxed, and not contracted, and also free from distress, the heart feels happy. And therefore, so it's right in there. Yeah. And then, yeah, yeah. So then, you haven't left out the body, you've actually used it. To facilitate this casting off of wrappings, the eradication of compression, the steadying from recklessness or distress, that's been dealt with in the body. The body acts as a basis where some of these issues can be understood, measured and released, because the body knows very well about letting go, does it all the time, picks up something and drops it. We do some work and we sit down. Yeah, we do some work, we lie down. Yeah, it's natural. We breathe in and we breathe out. Letting go for a body is pretty easy. For the mind, it's extraordinarily difficult. So again, you know, refer to this thing called mind, and this is my take on it. So a lot of this quality of experience I've had to look at for decades and review, both in terms of my own experience and in terms of actually what the early suttas, the early teachings say. You know. And naturally, coming through the English language, you have to refer to the words. So by and large, this experience called citta is translated as mind. There's another word, it's also translated as mind, manas, and if you thoroughly review it and you look at your own experience also, you can see they're referring to two different faculties. Perhaps they're conjoined. Mind faculty is very much associated, or it's manas, with selecting objects for attention. It's external. It's what is something. And this other faculty called citta is more like how is it? How is it? And so it's an effective sense. And I think this is quite crucial because the average person, I imagine, when they use the word mind, will go into the thought faculty, which is about discriminating objects. Yeah. When we go into something called heart, oh, how do I feel? Who am I? How is it? That's different. That's citta. Because citta is that which experiences distress, suffering, which we're trying to clear, anguish, which we want to clear, joy, which we want to have. This is the real thing, isn't it? This is the main topic. And these are not cognitive experiences. These are emotive experiences. And again, the teachings are samadhi is the one-pointedness of citta, or the citta gathered together. Ekagata cittasa. So, one-pointedness, okay, ekagata, and again, many people say, one point in mission, really focus on that one point, on the sensation, get a nice sharp point to focus on to get concentrated. No, that's not the way it's expressed. This word ekagata, the Buddha, in his struggles, his reviewing his experience, God, I'm tangled up with this, I'm stressed out with that, you know, I'm following this instinct, I'm reveling over here. Why don't I get a bit more focused? Let's get some stability. I became one-pointed. Right. In other words, he had one aim in mind, one purpose. Let's get steady. Let's review all this stuff rather than scattered all over the place. This is not an attention focus, is it? Primarily, it's an intention focus. What am I motivated by? I have one sense of motivation. Oh, yeah, that's heart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you recognize the importance the Buddha gave to things such as ethics, sensitivity, generosity, concern, loving kindness, these are not points of attention, are they? They're points of heart clarity and motivation. Whether I feel dismissive, sensitive, respectful, or what? That's a heart issue. It's nothing to do with focusing on a particular point. It's about getting this heart thing steady, and it's quite natural, actually. We are ethical creatures. We're born with it. We lose it, or we don't pay attention to it, but when we come back, think, oh, that was a bit... lost it there, dear. You know, let's get steady again. And we're loving creatures. We naturally bond. We're affectionate, tender-hearted, loving creatures. Of course, we're other things too, but, you know. So that is citta. That's what will enter samadhi. How will it do that? Now, if we take the term concentration and apply it in its normal sense, what will most of us do? We'll apply that which we've used for concentration. Clearly. And what do you concentrate on? You concentrate with your eyes. On the text, on the figures, on the numbers, on the details. You concentrate with your eyes, don't you? Because apart from the mind, that's our dominant sense organ, eye faculty. And the eye is great for doing that because you've got the muscles around. The eye will hold the eyeball steady, just deflect it, very sensitive. And within the eye, you can do this fine focusing. From a narrow focus to a greater focus, your eye organ does that to a good degree of refinement, seeing something close, distant, it's got a focusing agent in it. So when we do concentration, that's what we're going to use. We're going to hold steady. A little bit of muscles needed to hold the eyes steady. Maybe the head tenses up. And we're going to sharpen that gaze to see what we want to see. So you apply that. What's the effect on the citta? So it's stiffening. Okay. So pressure to hold that focus, no matter what happens. So when we get predetermined concentration, hold that focus no matter what happens. The citta gets pretty compressed. The intention is to hold it steady. And although we're not visually focusing, when we do meditation, we often close our eyes, but still, the having done so much of that concentrating through the eyes, that's what we've learnt to do when we concentrate. We've learnt to do that slight compression and intensity to a point. That's what we call concentrating. Now, when you look in the suttas, it ain't there. And you could speculate that in a culture where there was very little written words at all, no numbers, people didn't do that. They looked around in nature, they're walking around in trees, talking to each other, eating things. That focus, that concentration thing through the eyes is not that frequent. Whereas for us, it's probably very frequent. You know, work, reading. And that's the normal mode. But you walk around in a forest when it's dim lit, you're sensing, how is this affecting me? Is this dangerous? What's happening around me? You know, be aware. You're not asleep, you're very attentive, but you're not focusing in that one-pointed way. If you do, you might miss the tiger who's off in left field, because you wouldn't have a broad enough focus. You might miss a snake you just about put a foot on because you're so focused on it. You wouldn't do that. It's dangerous. Instead, you have an overall awareness with extreme sensitivity. And you might be listening, and you might be sensing through your skin, and you might also be aware of any fragrances and smells all around you. That's your norm. That's called concentration. In a forest, which is where these people lived. And then the Buddha's sort of saying, okay, then let's do some what we call meditation practice. So, okay, here's the body. Be mindful of the body. Very much encourage it. And then which bit? Body, you know, body thing, walking around. Which if you're in a jungle, in a forest, you'd be aware of your feet, your balance, how things all together, because you don't want to fall over. Yeah, right. Your barefoot, skin, very important. Whole boundary is very important. Balance is very important. So, yeah, there you go. Just be in your body. Now, for us, we're walking on concrete. We're sitting in cars. We're sitting in chairs. So your body kind of disappears. And mostly you're in your head, thinking, looking at the traffic, signs, what you can do next. So, you know, so the body kind of, it's always there, but you don't feel it. Most of the time you don't feel it. Or if you do feel it, it's associated with sport, or running around or swimming, kind of things we seek as rather trivial. If we want to get really serious, and very important things, we can go into our heads, which in a forest would be a very dangerous thing to do. Say, no, come into your body. This is so important. You should be really aware with every pore of your skin, every nerve. Yeah. More like that. So just, you know, shifting the focus. Are you focused? You bet I'm focused. What are you focusing on? Nothing in particular. Because if I focus on one thing in particular, I'll miss the rest of it. So I'm just focused on everything. But it's a different focus, isn't it? Rather than the focus that the eye does, which is extremely selective, narrow, it's a focus that's all-encompassing. And it's sensing what's the important bit right now in all this. Where's the pressures? Where's the balance? Where's the pleasure? Where's the pain? But primarily, where's the balance? Because for a body, walking, standing, that has to be pretty much number one. Otherwise, we get to a real mess. What's the balance? The body will seek homeostasis. Either balance in terms of physical balance, or yeah, I'm okay in this kind of temperature. Yeah, I can manage that. I'm okay with this kind of weight. My body can carry that weight. Yeah. So the whole thing. And in that, you're centered. You are concentered. Right? That's called concentration. Different, huh? Are you focused? Yes, of course you are. On what? On being centered and collected. And this means, you know, wayward thoughts, no. You know, mood, grudges, no. That's not going to do me any good. Hashing over the past, no, that's going to get in the way. Just focused. And when we come into something like mindfulness of breathing, which for some people is like a jail sentence or imprisonment, because this compression effect that comes with what I would respectfully call wrong concentration, I have to say that I don't want to dismiss other people's ways of doing things, but I've done this myself for years and had results, which had their good results, but basically overall was emotionally compressing, psychologically distorting, and relationally dysfunctional. But other than that, a good samadhi though. So we come into, you know, the Buddha says, hey, look guys, this is a real breeze. We could just sit here and breathe. That would be really cool, wouldn't it? Nothing to do, just breathing's happening. You know, it's comfortable. You don't have to figure it. It's nice and easy. Everybody does it. You know, there it is. And it, as it settles down, it mediates your emotions. What a great idea. Just be focused on that. That experience of being breathed. Now this life force flows through you and vitalizes and cools and calms. And it does, as it said, it calms your emotions. It says, hey, great, here's you. So then, you know, with the concentration mode, focus on a point on your breathing. Focus on a particular point on the breathing. Don't let your mind wander. You get into the clamp. Chitta gets compressed. We're trying to find the point. Well, where's the point in the breathing? Well, maybe it's my nose or my belly. Okay, I'll do one of those, and you get belly people and nose people, and, you know, whichever. Look at that one point there. Get one pointed. I'm one pointed. Oh yeah. But you're also compressed. The chitta is compressed. So this pressure is established. And there's a contradiction there because most people are already living under pressure. Yeah. You know, maybe if you're living a very cool, chilled, peaceful life, this is okay. But by and large, the way I see it is most people already have pressure, huge amounts of it, social pressure, family pressure, work pressure, 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 pressure. And the organ of concentration is worn sore with the amount of time one spent studying data, details, facts, figures, spreadsheets, traffic, eyes, you know, and the mind that behind the eyes is extremely sore and pressed. So then you don't want to be, you want to get clear of that. You don't want to have to use more of that. So it's perhaps better to be just a little bit fuzzy. You know. And let things kind of be fuzzy and settle. And don't even focus on breathing if it just makes you uptight and tense. Instead, just be a body. Move around. Open the chest. Relax the shoulders. You know? Take the weight out of your muscles. Do some standing, do some sitting, do some reclining, do some walking. Take the stress out of your inner body. Till you feel, I feel a bit fresh now. I feel a bit more space. And what is it that felt that? Your body felt it and your heart felt it. Now you're getting into the proper territory. So this, the inner body. And again, unfortunately, what I've noticed is the Buddha's reference to the body internally and externally is most generally translated as internally is my body, externally is your body. So internally is this body I can see here, externally that's you. And then that analysis in the Satipatthana, feeling internally, feeling externally. Internally my feelings, externally your feelings, what you feel. So when I'm being mindful, I'll be able to detect whether you're feeling joy based upon sensuality or joy based upon refined mind states. I'm going to be mindful of that. What's the chances of that happening? Most of the time, I don't have much idea what other people are feeling at all, let alone this refined focus. So when we review that, say, well, what happened to that analysis? That's got to be either impractical, useless, or flawed. Because if I'm sitting on my own in a forest, how am I supposed to focus on what somebody else's feelings are? But if we take it again and look at it perhaps amazingly enough, more obviously, internal means what's happening to my body internally. Externally, what's happening to my body externally. In other words, what sensory impingement comes from outside and what kind of senses of compression or ease are happening inside. It seems this is so strikingly obvious that you wonder how this got edited out somewhere. Till you kind of begin to speculate over the process of disembodiment that's pretty much established, certainly in Western culture, disembodiment, which means feeling is something that happens when you stand on a nail. There's nothing else happening, no other kind of feeling. And there's no such thing as an internal body, there's just this thing which I look at with my eyes and I kind of buff it up and I try to make it look decent, wear clothes. It's a social, it's my business card. Hey, this is me, I look like this, you know. My presentation. And I want to keep it healthy, fair enough. Internal body. Well, that means liver. No, I mean the sense of the internal body. And many people go, I don't know what you're talking about. Until you say, well, do you feel tense or relaxed? I'm all right. No, is that good? I'm fine. In other words, the actual sensitivity to the internal body is either not there or dismissed, because it's associated with emotion. And emotions are uncomfortable experiences. They're not socially, they're not functional experiences. They're socially disruptive. It can be socially disruptive experiences, so we won't have any. Or we'll limit them. You know, have a few drinks in the evening, you can have an emotion. Rest of the day, get on with your work. Emotions are going to just get in the way of that. So let's stop having them. I mean, shut down the heart, shut down the inner body. In fact, perhaps deny they exist. Or relative denial, which we're quite good at. Yeah. So then, you know, in that kind of model, we can put the pressure on, because this is the job, this is the performance, this is what we need to get done. I'm sorry, but we've got to get this done. I'm sorry you're late. Da, 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 da. I'm ever so sorry, but you're sailing sacked. Because you didn't run fast enough. In other words, you didn't keep up with the pressure. Yeah. Or you didn't do the whatever was needed socially. So get pressure, adopt pressure, fit in with pressure as a lifestyle. Then, you know, so this, we sacrifice that capacity for the sake of social function. To the point in which, you know, there's established a kind of a personality. It's something that's developed. The citta is just an aware, sensitive heart thing. And it comes into this world, and it really, what's happening, you know, like sights, sounds, touches, and there's people, very important people. Yeah. So people, I've got to fit in with other people, you know, mother, father, brother, sisters, tribe, group, whatever. Got to, then I'll get okay. So personality is basically something that forms through social contact. This will get me approved of, this will get me excluded. So we start to adopt the patterning that society expects of us. Now, if you're in a nice, warm, compassionate group, fine. But if you're not, then you don't get formed around warmth and compassion. You get formed around whether you're good at school, turn up punctually, correct behavior, believe in the right things, so forth. So you get patterned, the personality gets formed through social contact, social adjustment, manipulation, pressures. And the personality then edits what the citta will experience and attune to. And so many people experience a kind of conflict. They're getting all kinds of, maybe getting feeling unhappy, and their personality says, oh, just get over it, or doesn't matter, or tomorrow I'll deal with it, or, well, it's his fault. And the innate effects in the citta are not properly addressed. And it builds up. You know, so you get domestic scene. Maybe the guy's been off at work, had to scramble there to get there in the traffic, got stuck in the traffic, turned up late, got bawled at. Had a whole load of jobs to do, which was much more than he could manage, got pressurised, you know. Had an argument with the other guy in the other office, da-da-da-da-da, that was unpleasant. Told him to off, and then so forth. Got back in the car, got stuck in another traffic jam, got very angry and upset. Got back, tense, frazzled. And then the wife, why are you late? So he just blows up at her. Because she's had a rough day too. Kids were bawling. Neighbours were uncooperative. machine broke down, try to get a service agent to come and deal with it. He said tomorrow, you know, this went wrong. So she's frazzled and pressurized too. Two pressurized people meet each other, bam, explosion, domestic violence. Absolutely standard. Yeah. So when we live in that pressurized state, this is volcanic. We get, see, the skin of that around the personality can suddenly crack open, and we act in unmediated emotion. Emotion has not been mediated. Personality is just canned it, and it rots. So this is the problem. We don't actually acknowledge and deal with emotion as it happens, and pressure as it happens, and disappointment as it happens, and overwhelm as it happens. It just builds up, and then we blow. Or we cave in. Yeah. So the other very common feature of modern life is depression. People just get so jittery, get so flattened under pressure with such little support and nourishment, it just basically can't lift anymore. It just sinks. And then life becomes meaningless, pointless. Why bother? And then suicide, or drink, drugs, suicide, that kind of escape thing. So through not actually mediating. This is then very important territory. And often quite a volatile and poignant and, you know, a lot of stuff in it. And it's okay, well, it's just, you know, let's not go in there too quick. Let's just kind of hold the body and tune into the inner body and just feel what's being felt. Maybe okay, nothing much. Comfortable enough, feel a bit tired, a bit worn out. Yeah, everybody gets that. So a bit grumpy. Yeah, kind of fed up, bored, negative. Yeah, could do with a break. And somebody, what's that doing in my room? Got annoyed about that. You know, what's she doing? Starting criticising her. She turned up. She didn't do that. Kind of soured, negative. And then, I'm such a nasty person. Why am I so nasty, everybody? So, unable to mediate it, the personality then starts attacking the citta. That's why it's so essential, you know. Wait, pause. First thing is feel the emotion and lift your attention, widen. So lift off the hot point, lift off the topic. Lift, don't argue with it, don't dispute, just lift off the topic. You can do that. And you're not going to do it with your mind, you do it with your heart. That's okay. It's okay. It's got lifting off the topic, and I call it widening. You widen your heart, say, okay, everybody gets, I get angry, everybody gets angry, we get upset, things don't work, frustration, not fair. We've all heard this story. Whoa, let's take some breath. You know? Yeah. So that's then, you see, then, oh, breathing's rather good then. Once you get wider and softer. And there's processing. What's the focal organ for that? Well, the focal organ for body is the body. The focal organ for heart is the heart. Yeah. The focal organ for the eye is visuals. The focal organ for the mind is mentals, cognitive. So you're applying a cognitive attention to an embodied experience. It's not the right one, is it? It's like, you know, you go into a shoe shop and ask for a banana. It's not going to work. I mean, Try and wear a banana, it's not going to work. So don't bother with the visual, because that's visual is about external things. Body is about embodied things. So let's get the embodied. It's going to be tactile, isn't it? Basically, we all know how to touch. We don't do touch very much, compared with eyes. But it has probably unrivaled sensitivity. The eye is very good at seeing outlines, object definition. When you touch something, probably immediately you'll get certain impressions: hot, cold, smooth, soft, light, you know, moving or still, with no effort. That comes immediately to you. Yeah. And you'll also know how hard you're touching, whether you're pressing it, squeezing it, stroking it. That comes in more or less instinctively. Yeah. And you pick something up with a second, you get a sense of how hard to squeeze it, whether you just rest it or you need to hold it firmly. Everybody does that. You don't see people picking up a spade like it's a feather. You know, they get that wood firmness and they know how that. So sense faculty, very, very sensitive, very much attuned, a lot of focusing. When you take something like the finger and you put it on an object like this, you'll probably recognize pretty immediately whether it's plastic or metal. Well, your eye wouldn't know that. You would detect the coolness of metal compared with slightly less cool plastic. Now you place a finger on a living tissue, then you get another effect. So it tingles. It tingles. So if you place your finger on your palm, that point of contact, there's no pressure. It's kind of difficult to really know which is the finger and which is the palm. There's this kind of glow tingle where they touch. There's a warmth there. Is it my finger or is it the hand? In fact, it merges. Samadhi is a pretty much a natural feature for bodies. Tactile. Erotic touch. Why are people who touch erotically? It's because of a sense of merging, non-differentiation, and that being agreeable, if it's safe. So all kinds of psychological qualities start happening at that point. Yeah. It's safe, it's not going to bite. It's not hard. So it's got psychological and emotional qualities. It's gentle, it's soft, it's non-abrasive. Boom. All those qualities open up. So heart gets involved and psychology gets involved just through touch. So when we are meditating on body, perhaps the focus should be based upon the kind of focus one would have when one touches something. And in fact, the Buddha says, you touch the deathless in your body. So the samadhi metaphor is touch, merging, because touch merges. Insight metaphor is visual, because insight discriminates. But samadhi is, first of all, the merging that allows the dissonances and the discords to be sensed and soothed. That's the kind of focus. And clearly the Buddha was a maestro at this kind of thing, and he could do it, his sense of his own breathing body, he could kind of have that set focus to just the pulsations, rhythms, flows, energies that are happening as the body breathes. Did not watch the breath, but was sensitive to the process of breathing. And as he says, sensitive to the entire body, breathing in, breathing out. And that's literally translation of the instruction. Okay, so change of focus, isn't it? How we focus, the organ we focus with, what that focus will bring. It will automatically bring a heart quality, it will automatically have a psychological effect. We learn to not put too much pressure, but not be sloppy. We learn the right kind of attentiveness. You know, we learn to adjust like you would with touch. You can adjust to extremely refined degrees. So you learn a lot through that. And as one gets more skillful at it, then that breathing process is one of happiness and ease, which we may not be able to accomplish, you know, for years, actually. But then, you know, as establishing these four establishments, establishment of getting used to feeling pleasure and pain, and the ability to, okay, now if you absorb into pleasure and pain, you're going to be stuck. But if you maintain a focus that allows pleasure and pain to arise and pass, then you've got some freedom there. Physical, but it's also probably more significant, emotional pleasure and pain. Can we sustain a focus that learns over time gradually to establish that I'm sensitive, I'm aware, I'm not ignoring it, but I'm not getting reactive, I'm not getting into a who did this, why did that, why am I like this, why am I like that. I'm just feel the feeling. Everybody gets this. That's kind of establishment of equanimity, without which is not insensitive. Because I need to find balance above all. Above all. And if I start getting swinging into too much of the pleasure stuff, I'm going to lose my balance. If I start getting upset and tight around displeasure, I'm going to lose my balance. So I've got to accept the fact that some things are just pretty unpleasant. Boring, tedious, not what I like. Okay. Yeah. And the mental, emotional stuff is far more significant. Yeah. I like things to be on time, I don't like things to be late. I like things to be at a certain temperature, I don't like it to be another temperature. I like people to be this way, I don't like it to be that way. I like food to be like this, I like times, I want to, you know, goes on. Just look, it isn't all pleasant. It's not going to be pleasant. It's going to be okay, and you can find the balance. And then we really address, using that balance, we begin to be able to address this very sensitive, very impacted, karma-rich, historically moulded citta. Address it. How do you address citta? Citta addresses citta. How do you focus on citta? You focus on citta with citta. How do you focus on the heart? You focus on the heart with heart. The easiest simile for that is listening. It's better than seeing. Listening again has a naturally broad focus. It's naturally broad, expansive, it's circular. It's not sharp, one-pointed, it's circular. Listening immediately is giving signals to the heart. Immediately. And the most powerful signals that we listen to are human signals. Because we're social creatures, so we listen. We pick up very quickly the signs of power, threat, dismissal, joy, welcome, gratitude. We pick those up in voices. We pick them up even when we see people, we think. Even if we're incorrect, we still pick that up. But when we pick up things through the ears, listening, that listening faculty, whatever is annoying, irritating, disappointing, listening can remain open. Listening easily, heart faculty, properly listening, remains open, sensitive, not rejecting, not adopting, tuning in. One is mindful. One is mindful. Or heartful, if you like. And through this process, as the tangles and distresses and dents are listened to or sensed, they begin to lose the pressure because one's not putting any pressure on them. They lose the wrapping because you're not wrapping them up, you're letting them be exposed. So the wrappings of shame and personality and what I should be begin to move off, dissolve. The wrappings of guilt move away, dissolve. And this unwrapping, and this dissolving, the heart comes out of its occluded state. And there's a certain, it finds its balance and poise. And this is samadhi. So this is an address. There might be elements in that you find useful. I don't expect it will all be useful, but some of it might be. And if it's been unpleasant, I'm sure you can cope with it. So let's take some time for direct practice.